Surprise!
A lot has happened since our last recorded episode. When was the last time we recorded? The 28th? The day before I gave birth?
I think so.
I just edited that episode and I look miserable. I mean, I felt horrid. I was in labor, so.
What y'all don't know about Fraz is that Fraz is like corporate America's dream. Like, corporate America wishes every mother was like Fraz. Like, Fraz was like, I'm actively in labor. Let me hop onto Zoom real quick. And was like beat bopping on her laptop, would be like, hold on, I'm having a contraction, have absolutely no reaction to it, and then be like, I'm ready to work again. Was literally like freshly off the delivery table, probably still like medically impaired, and was like, hey girl, next week's episode is gonna drop. And I was like, didn't you just grow a person and shove it out of you? Why are you editing our podcast right now? And I would like to everyone to know that I said we can take a break. This she is did. Not my doing.
I said
we could stop for a year if you want.
It's while she's potato-y, like she's just a lump right now for the most part. I just had nothing else to do other than be in labor for literally 2 weeks. What was it? No, I was
and
in
you
labor
have
for
a toddler.
I know, it was horrible. Like,
the way you were like every day. Like, my boyfriend was so worried about you because I, like, casually mentioned you were in labor. And then multiple weeks after that, I was like, we're recording. And he was like, I thought she was in labor.
I was.
And I was like, yeah, they actually do let you record a podcast from the hospital.
I don't think I'll ever do, like, a my pregnancy story video. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll feel, like, oversharing one day. Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact that, like, I went into false labor. I went into early labor. They tried to induce me. My body was like, you're not doing that. That's not going to work.
We're not done.
Did you know you could have a failed induction? I didn't.
Like, we learned something new this week.
No, literally, they like they're supposed to put this balloon in you that's supposed to make you go into labor, and my body was like
the Foley balloon or the Folly balloon.
Yeah,
did your body like pop it? Like your body like did a Kegel and like popped the balloon. It was like we're done.
Well, the last iteration of the balloon, there was the balloon was a whole saga, but the last on the 28th, I went in to try to finally get induced because they were like you've been installed labor for a very long time, and she just wasn't sitting correctly in my body to like make the things happen that needed to happen. And so my contractions were basically doing nothing. So they were like, you're finally going to get induced. Like, it's going to be great. And then they couldn't get the balloon to stay in my body. It just was falling out. And they were like, you're not dilated enough.
It's because of
for
the
that
dates.
To be the case.
The dates.
I know. So then I was hysterical because they were like, okay, you're going to come in tomorrow for induction and it's probably going to take 2 to 3 days for your body to like do it. And I was in hysterics. Like, I can't leave Jay that long. Like, I was a mess. I go home. I went into labor. I was in labor all night long having contractions. I went in the next day, 4-hour labor. 4 hours from the time I walked through the door to the baby was falling out of me.
She said, good morning. Heard you were talking about me.
I kept smashing the epidural button and I was going to take a nap. And my husband was like, blood, blood. And I was like, oh, I should call somebody about that. And they were like, oh, your water broke. And then they were like, oh, she's coming out. She's coming out. She's coming out. So that was
the dates. The dates.
I'm telling you. Anyways, so that was the end of my February.
And she's a leap day baby.
Yeah, she is. Right? They wanted to put me on the news. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to begin her life by doxing my entire family.
No. I see why they asked. But if anyone knew you are you, they should not have asked. You know what I'm saying? Like, I see
it. If things were different, I would be like, hell yeah. Because it would be so fun.
If you like were like a, like you sold insurance for like State Farm. Like
right.
That could
how
be fun.
How cute would that be? Yeah.
Very but fun no. And gorgeous and cute, but I think you're in a bit of a different predicament.
Yeah, and it was like, I can't sign this paper, but thank you so much for asking me.
Have you decided if you're going to celebrate her birthday on March 1st or February 28th? Me and my students were having a debate about this, not about your child, yeah. But just about leap day birthdays in general.
I personally feel like March is a more birthday-y month. That's just me, though. So
interesting.
I'm just going to try to celebrate it on the weekend.
That's a good decision. So it's like whatever day is more convenient. Because we were talking about it, like me and my class were, and I was like if you're a bartender and you're checking IDs and it's the 28th and they were born on the 29th, like do you let them drink if it's like the day before their technical 21st birthday, or do you have to wait till March?
I feel like she's gonna go to a college town bar and they're going to give her some shit. Like, I feel like I'm so nervous. I want to like call the bar ahead for her and be like, hey, my daughter is coming out for a bar crawl. And I just want to make sure that the policy is.
You're going to serve her.
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't get these calls very often.
Yeah. But I eventually she'll have an opinion and then we'll just do that.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I assumed is like, yeah. It's like once you have like a, once you can speak.
Yeah, I'll take the wheel until she's ready, and then she can just tell me what the sitch is.
What she wants her birthday to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is valid.
But anyways, so what have you been up to?
We've really been in this bitch. Like, it's March. And it's, the kids are marching. Not towards their work, but towards something. So the biggest, I've just been like at my job working and doing things, which has been interesting. Not a ton of updates on the day-to-day job front. One thing I am, oh, actually, it's a lie. There is updates there. One thing I'm nervous about, and I'm trying to have a good attitude and be open-minded, is right now I teach two classes of AP and then one class of like regular ed, and I really like that. I think that's like the perfect balance. And the guy that teaches AP World, which is what they take in 10th grade, and I teach 11th graders, he came to me the other day and he was like, hey, I really want you to be able to keep your schedule, but the majority of the kids in World, they're not doing their work, so I don't want to put them in another AP class. So we were kind of debating how we should handle that, and I just really hope we have enough kids that I don't have to teach an extra class of the regular ed. And not even any shade to the regular ed kids. The main reason I like don't want to teach that class is not because of the kids. I don't like the curriculum as much, and it's only a one semester class, and the AP is 1 year, and I just like being with them for the whole year. I feel like you can build the relationship more, and just like it's much more rewarding. So I just really hope that next year I get my same schedule. If I don't, I guess I'll live. But if they do give me anything but U.S. history, I will not live.
Yeah.
And other update.
Yeah.
I had to go. We had a teacher professional development day, and I wasn't going to go anywhere because I didn't want to. And then last minute, they were like, oh, we're having this thing specifically for teachers of AP classes. And because it's my first year teaching an AP class, I was like, I should probably go. This might actually be helpful. And a few notes about this PD. One, it was one of the most helpful I've been in my entire life, and I'm going to tell you why. They literally just shoved all the AP US history teachers in one room, and the facilitator said, so what's going well with you guys? What's not going well? And we all just talked and shared things with each other, and I have never gotten more out of a PD in my entire life.
Yes, I love those days. We used to do that in my credential program sometimes. Like, instead of class, they'd be like, okay, talk about your assignment, like what's happening, and like have like a round table kind of brainstormy moment, and it was really, really nice.
Yes.
Kind of like therapy.
It was more like a collaboration meeting more than therapy, because like we all went around the room and said, like, because different schools do their schedules differently. So we all said, like, how often do you have your kids? How long is your class period? And then we shared, like, I was saying that I think I'm doing really well with like political cartoons. So I shared like how I facilitate analysis of that. And then I said that I was really struggling with teaching them how to write essays. And so the other teacher was like, oh, I use these sentence starters and it made a huge difference. Like, and we were all just passing back and forth like PowerPoints and worksheets and all these things, and it was so useful.
I love that. I think we've talked about this before, like one of the best parts about working in education is when you get to collaborate like that.
Yes. And like and I think it's so, I hate forced collaboration, and I think you really can't collaborate at school, because like, no shade to my administrators. I know that you have to do this and you didn't really have a choice. We have collaborative planning after school once a week. And just like by the end of the day, I'm worried about what I have to do for tomorrow. So I like don't want to collaborate with you because I have my own to-do list and I'm stressed out and I'm really tired. Like, I was with kids all day. So the fact that we had a complete set aside day, no kids in the building, and it was on a Friday that I didn't have to think about getting stuff ready for the next day or anything. Like, I was really able to like focus and collaborate, and it was actually productive. So that was great. But the terrible part of it is I work in a district where there's lots of people. Some people have money. Some people don't have money, but all those kids go to school. And one thing I have noticed is that the schools are very different depending on the surrounding area, which I found to be not ideal.
Well, they're funded by property tax, yeah?
I don't know exactly how, like, within one district, if it works differently, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if it's, like, all of the county and then they spread that equally, or if it, like, goes individual by neighborhood. I don't know how the money situation is working out. I just know what I saw. Because the school that I teach at is an amazing place with an amazing people that I love that appears to have not received certain things that other schools have received. So I was at this other school and I'm walking around. This is nice. Y'all don't got roaches in here or nothing. And I was willing to overlook that because the school that I was at is much older than my school. So it got remodeled recently. I was like, you know what? I can get that. You're going to remodel the older schools before ones that were built later. I understand. This is where I unfortunately lost my mind. At my school, not every kid has a Chromebook. Not all of them have a device. So we just ran out. So it was kind of first come, first serve. So that means all of the lovely resources that my district has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on, I can't use a ton of them. With my AP class, those kids were on top of it. They all have devices. They got in there quickly. Mm-hmm. But with my other class, I have, I would say at least 35% of my class doesn't have a Chromebook. So I can't assign something that's online when a third of the kids can't do it. If it was one or two, I could give them an alternate. But when it's that much, I just can't. So that means tons of stuff that I could be using, I can't use with them. And then I went to this other school. I asked some of the teachers there. I was like, hey, what's you guys' Chromebook situation? Every single child has one. And not only does every single child have one, teachers have five spares in their room and chargers for every single one.
The chargers is really luxurious.
So my school, we ran out of Chromebooks. So some of the kids didn't get Chromebooks, but at least I would say half of our kids never got a charger.
Yeah. We had a Chromebook cart in my third grade classroom. And then we had to like share the chargers, and as the year went on, they would break. So you were sharing more and more by the end of the year. So that resource distribution is part of the research that I did for grad school.
What did you find? It's not distributed?
No, it's not distributed. It's by property tax and by school site. So, and also redlining and gerrymandering comes into play as well. Because school districts, back when they were desegregated, were never truly desegregated. And it has perpetuated a cycle of poverty and affluence in different schools.
I was talking to my aunt about it, actually. I'm big on like multiple things are true at one time. So that's a big part of it. Specifically with the Chromebooks, this is my theory. I think it's like a multi-problem approach. So bear with me. This is going to be nuanced. So administrators in low-income schools often have more on their plate. They're dealing with more because families are going through more difficulties. So kids are going through more difficulties. I just mean that very like matter-of-factly. There's just more difficulties at hand. So my theory is also that in the higher income schools, they're being run in kind of a different way. So like a friend of mine who has a child at the school where they all got the Chromebooks, she was telling me how in like the 3 weeks before they had to turn the Chromebooks in for summer, the parents were getting phone calls at least like once or twice a week being like, turn in your Chromebook, turn in your Chromebook, turn in your Chromebook. After they were supposed to be turned in, administrators reached out one-to-one to individual parents that had not turned in the Chromebooks yet. So I think part of it is they're not being given equal resources, but I also think part of it is we're expecting schools where people are dealing with extreme poverty to be able to handle these large administrative tasks. And like administrators at a school that are dealing with tons of parents, tons of kids with emotional behavioral stuff, like tons of that, they don't have the time to be sitting at their desk calling those individual parents to get the Chromebooks and chargers turned back in. So I think part of the reason we ran out is because we never collected them properly the year before, and we never collected them properly because our administrators are stretched so thin that they weren't able to follow the procedure, as opposed to like a higher income school that's dealing with less of the day-to-day issues. They could kind of like be more organized in the way they went about it. And then if you also factor in like in a higher income school, parents are more likely to be able to pick up the phone at work. Because if you have a high paying office job, you can pick up your phone at work and no one's going to care. But if you're working at Publix, you don't get to pick up your phone in the middle of your shift. So it's just like so many different aspects of it at play, like logistically too.
Yeah. And that's the other part of the research that I did too, because it's also, like you said, the time that parents have mm-hmm. or don't have. Also internet access and language barriers and mm-hmm. all kinds of shit. And like the Chromebook thing is, in the grand scheme of things, you would think pretty small, but it's shit like
but
that.
It's
that, like,
huge.
Yeah, and it leads to frustration and pain points between parents and schools that leads to wider distrust of both. Like, mm-hmm. schools will trust parents less and parents will trust caregivers less. I got some shit back when we did an episode and I talked about my research a little bit, like, talking about the systemic exclusion of caregivers, and people were like, what the fuck does that even mean? It's like, the system itself, intentionally or unintentionally, leaves out caregivers. It could very well be, like you said, like, admin is stretched so fucking thin. The resources in general are stretched so thin that it's like shit just falls through the cracks like that. And then, like mm-hmm. I said, it like snowball effects into bigger issues. And like, that sucks.
I completely see why it creates a distrust for parents. Cause like, putting myself in the parents' shoes of what they would probably see is like, you never gave my kid a computer. And then now they failed a bunch of assignments because they didn't have their computer to do it. And you're telling them to go to the library. Like, I can see where as a parent, it makes you feel very disconnected. And then the other funny part is that when I was talking to my friend's child who goes to the school where all the kids got Chromebooks, she lost her mind. She was like, what do you mean they don't all have Chromebooks? What do you do? How do you do this? How do you do this? And I was like, girl, we don't.
Yeah.
We do
it's
not.
It's the same shit with like people being like, oh, you don't have a smart board? Like, what do you do? And I'm like,
I try my best.
Yeah. Yeah, you do your best. That's what you do. Did you decide about your grad school situation?
I did. It's been quite the process. Let me just tell you, this is not for the faint of heart. You'd really think they don't want people to be teachers. So I talked about it a little bit already, but I don't have to go to grad school, but I have to go to a certification program. And if I go to grad school, then I get a raise. And I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid. So originally I applied to this one school and I was only going to apply there because I really liked them, but they were being really annoying and wanted my AP scores from high school. And so I, even though now I'm accepted there finally, I'm not going. Like, goodbye. You were annoying, so we're done.
No, they pissed you off one too many times.
No, literally. Like, you have three times to piss me off and you did all three of them just in the application process. So I don't want to stay there for 2 years. So I was going to go to this other school because I really, really liked them. They were very organized. It's a small private school. I already met with my advisor and he was like, we can work your class schedule around your podcast and your stream. He didn't say that, but he just said your other job. This is what I said to him. I said, I have a second job. I work in media and a lot of them are like specific timed meetings where I'm on camera talking to people. So I can't really like join class because I have to do meetings for my other job. And he was like, we can definitely work your class schedule around that. They said I would be able to finish in a year and a half instead. I just really liked them and they were so organized. But unfortunately, it's very expensive. So RIP to them. Thanks for all your time and effort if you're listening, but I made the decision to not go there because I was choosing between two schools. One is like a state school and it's going to be like 10 grand for the entire master's, but they very much like they seem competent and organized, but it was like, here's your schedule, enjoy. Like they are not going to make exceptions for me. They don't really care about this podcast, which they should.
They should.
But that one's 10 grand and the one that was being super nice is 40 grand.
That's really expensive.
Yeah. So I decided to go with the cheaper one.
How many years would that take with your pay bump to pay back 40 grand?
Like literal decades.
Yeah.
Like literally decades. And part of it, this is the other part where I know it might seem like I was like casually willing to spend 40 grand. I have a grant that I never used that was 14 grand. My parents, because I had a scholarship in college, they have money that was supposed to pay for my undergrad that they never used. So they said I could use it towards grad school. So I was only going to come out of pocket, like I think 5 or 6 grand for the mm-hmm. expensive oh, okay. school. But I thought about it and I was like, A, I'm paying 6 grand out of pocket to get the same raise. Like if mm-hmm. I do the cheap school, the raise is the same. Like no one cares where I got the master's. They just care that I got it. Right. And then the other part of that is this is a master's of arts in teaching, which if we're being honest, I don't want. I have no desire to achieve this degree in any way, shape or form. I'm sure I will learn something and be better for it, but it's not what I would choose. So I also think eventually in my life, I would like to teach community college. And to do that, I would need a master's in history. So I was like, I should leave some of my money in its little pot in case I ever want to go back again and get a master's that I actually do want.
It just sucks so bad that they won't let you just get a master's in what you want now. Because a master's in history would serve your students.
So they will and they won't. A master's in history would give me the pay bump. Like, I would get the raise for that. But it would not satisfy my certification stuff. Yeah. Hypothetically, I could do one of their little online certification programs and not get a degree and just get the certification and get a master's degree in history. But if I'm going to pay and do classes, you're giving me a raise.
And do you get more of a bump? Like, the way the salary schedules are here, it's like you can get more than one master's and get an additional bump, or like a doctorate and get an additional bump.
Oh, I haven't looked. I don't know.
It's like at the top for us. It's like the number of credits and then...
I know for the doctorate, I would get an additional bump. I don't think I would get it for a second master's, but if I got a second master's, it would be to do community college or be a college professor.
You'd be so good at that.
I think it would be fun. But we shall see what my lifelong career holds for me. Now that they're banning TikTok, I actually have to work for a living. So
horrible day for free speech. Great day for me.
I also think it's a really bad day for monopolization in the US.
Tell me more. I don't know what those words mean.
So monopolization is like when one company controls an entire industry, which is really fucking bad for customers. Because if there's only one hammer store, there's only one store on planet Earth where you can buy hammers. They can charge $200 for the shittiest hammer ever, and you really don't have a choice. So that's why it's bad when there's only one choice of companies, because they can fuck you over. Like, they can fuck you over as a customer because they have no competition and you have no other choices. And then they can also fuck over their workers because the workers have no other choices.
Is the hammer store Meta?
Yeah. Like, if our country bans TikTok, then Mark Zuckerberg pretty much has monopolized like the entire social media space, which is really not good for advertisers, customers, anybody except for him.
Do you think he did that on purpose? Is he behind this?
I don't know. I could see it going either way. And I also think it's probably like in the middle of on purpose. Like, I think he didn't come up with it, but he saw it happening and was like, that would be good for me. Let's run with that.
I mean, everything going on in like politics right now is just such a shit show.
I went to vote in the primary because really the only reason I did is because I like to tell my students that I've voted in every election I've ever been eligible to vote in against all odds.
People can look that up too.
Exactly. People can. And I told them that too. So I really, because especially when we do like voter registration for the seniors, I like to tell them about how when there was an election in Georgia, like a bunch of years ago, that was a runoff election and they'd never sent me my absentee ballot. And I drove through the night to go vote because I was like, you are not going to fuck around and take away my right to vote, motherfuckers, because I was in college. So I was far away. And I was like, I really don't give a fuck. Zoom, zoom. I'm in me Honda CRV voting.
I love that.
I also voted internationally when I studied abroad in college. You can vote internationally. It is a huge pain in the ass, but you can do it. If you are a U.S. citizen, you can still vote when you live abroad. You don't get to vote in anything local, but you get to vote for the president.
I love
voting. And so I like to tell them that I always vote. And then, when was it? A while ago, I went to go vote in the primary for my state, and it was very depressing. I was the only person there. I walked in and all the poll workers were standing there to greet me, which was awkward. I wish they would not make eye contact with me, but thanks for all you do. I just felt awkward for you and for me. I'm just looking at my ballot.
I love going in person to vote.
I always go in person.
For the last election, I took Jay in her Ruth Bader Ginsburg onesie and like a cute matching bow and big ruffly knee socks, and I made her sit in the booth with me.
You can sit in your booth?
No, I was standing.
I have just like a standing cubicle.
I was standing, and I had the little
partition
like
thing,
test-taking divider.
Test-taking divider. The fucking poll worker hands you the little manila folders and it's like, all right, set these up around your ballot.
Yeah, I love it. It was so fun. So yeah, participating in democracy is fun and also not fun.
Keep doing it even when it's sad. How's your grad school going? Aren't you still in grad school?
Yeah, I'm taking a break though because of the frog in my lap right now.
What made you choose a frog?
Because she was born on leap year and she's a leapling, and they gave froggy hats to the babies.
That's
so
fun.
I was like, she's a frog. But the frog emoji that we currently have is kind of horrifying, so I'm really hopeful that I can find something a little softer and cuter as time wears on. I thought about doing my cravings because that's what I did with Jay. She was a potato, and I ate a lot of potatoes. But this time it was cheeseburgers, chocolate, and cake. I actually hate cake, but I was obsessed with cake with W.
Do you have any other lore you would like to share about being a mother of two humans? You're now outnumbered. So I just feel like we really need to check in on you.
Postpartum just sucks. Like, it's like not fun to talk about because it's like, it's just hard. I just like hate talking about it in the world because people just like twist everything you say. You're either not grateful or like people just don't really like to hear about it. Like, there's people that do love to hear about it and they're very sweet. But unfortunately, the people that are not sweet are just really loud about being mean. What is the quote? It's like, when the lamb cries in the forest, sometimes come the mother, sometimes come the wolf. It's like you're vulnerable. That. Like, there's a sect of people that will be like, thank you so much. Like, I feel so seen by you. And then there's another group of people that's like, wow, you're weak. You're a bad mom. You're not built for this. Like, every worst fear you have internally about motherhood that like is just instinctual. I think there's like an instinctual part of our brains that thinks that we're not enough or we're not good enough because it's like you love this little being so much that you just want to be everything to them. And it's like, wow, maybe I do suck. Like, maybe they would be better off if
I was like imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's very much like that. And like, I'm in such awe of people that can be so vulnerable about motherhood on the internet because it's just not me. I tried it. I did it. It was like the second I announced the best thing in my life that I was pregnant with Jay. And like, I was so excited. The second I did that, everybody was like, she's annoying now. Ever since she got pregnant, she sucks. Like,
oh, I remember that. People were so nasty to you.
It was horrible. I mean, somebody said that I had postpartum psychosis last time because I cried because somebody like totally misconstrued something I said. And like, it was just like horrible. First of all, there's nothing wrong with people. Like, people really do have postpartum psychosis. Like, that's very valid. And there's nothing wrong with that or shameful about that. But like, I didn't.
Experiencing an emotion is not psychosis. This is a little bit of a separate tangent, but I think it's relevant. I think that in the U.S., we have this, not just the U.S., but what I've observed in the U.S., we have this tendency to really like over medicalize things, especially when it comes to like women's health and postpartum, I feel. And I think it's interesting because we get like one of two experiences. Either you get gaslit when you actually have a problem and they're like, no, everyone has that. You're actually fine. Or when you're experiencing like natural, insane hormonal changes after having a baby, you get made to feel like something is wrong with you and this is weird and your body is like fucked up for you experiencing that. When in reality, that's just like part of the natural process and you need like just support in that. And it doesn't necessarily mean there's like a diagnosis that comes with it. Like, you being extra emotional doesn't mean you have psychosis. Like, right. I think a lot of people, especially online, just take it to 100 really quick.
Yeah. And it's like, they see this like one moment of your life where you're trying to like be vulnerable or like show other people that they're not alone. Because I'm not in any way ashamed of like having postpartum anxiety. I'm doing so much better this time than I was with Jay. But like, I was a first time mom, you know, and it's like,
this is your second rodeo. So like,
yeah, it reminds me of during the Victorian era, women were diagnosed with hysteria. And it wasn't until 1980 that it was removed from the DSM. And it's like, it reminds me of that. And I'm not saying that to be like alarmist or dramatic. Yes. I just mean like, you're happy, you're annoying. You're sad, you're attention seeking. It's like that Barbie monologue. You literally can't do shit right. And I'm no longer willing in my life to put on display the people that I love and the best parts of my life because I'm not willing to have that attacked anymore.
And like ripped apart. Yeah.
No, like my fucking husband was wearing an AirPod and people went nuts on my pregnancy announcement. And I'm like, if the worst thing about my husband,
like, can I live?
Is that can he I live? Has an emotional support silent AirPod in his ear at all times. Okay.
Also, like, didn't he like just get off the phone? Wasn't he like talking to his parents or your parents or something?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, he's my personal secretary, girl. Like, I was pushing a baby and eating a grilled cheese afterwards. Like, I was busy. But like, somebody had to field the calls.
He was updating the community. You're so much nicer than me because I literally would have, I'm insane. So like, if people left comments on my video saying that, I would have gone on their Facebook page and found their pregnancy announcements and been like, is that your husband's Xbox in the background? Like, if you go low, I'm gonna go lower.
I wish that I could. I just like, I have this like fear of being mean.
I say that that's what I would do. But in reality, every time someone's mean to me in my comments section, I'm like, okay, let me address this with a prompt apology from the heart. So
I know, but if somebody did it to you, I would be on their Facebook page. That's the difference. Like if somebody does it to my friends or family or somebody I love.
No, that's how I feel. Like I was like stalking the people that did it to you.
Yeah, I will do it for my friends in a second. But for myself, it's like, I'm like, no, it's okay. I'll just make a little joke. But like, honestly, everything is going good.
I'm happy for you. And I think the teacher quit talk community is happy for you. I'm glad everything's going good. As good as it can be.
Yeah. I'm just trying to stay super present with the baby. I just want to like soak up every single second of newbornness because they grow so fast. Like you said, like she looks big now.
No, like they grow so fast because like 2 months in adult time is nothing, but 2 months in baby time is so long.
Nothing marks the passing of time like the size of a child.
No, literally.
So it's good.
I saw someone on TikTok who did for their second baby, instead of having a baby shower, they did like a house party where like they put up a bulletin board with all the chores that needed to be done and they got like food catered and you just came over and picked a chore and did it.
Hell
yeah. So like there were people painting the nursery, there were people vacuuming, there were people folding up all the clothes. Like they just had like list abounds of things to be done. And then it looked like they got like, you know how you can get like Chipotle and it's like for a, like they had it like that, like a buffet style.
Oh, that's cool. I want to do that for someone else. It's
right?
So cool.
With me, I have an older sister. So when my mom had me, instead of, I don't know if she did it instead of or in addition to, they threw instead of like a baby shower, it was a big sister shower. And they like all decorated onesies and did like small gifts.
Oh, that's so special.
Well, also, my sister was older than Jay. I think my sister was like 5 or 6 when I was born.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
So that's, you can have a party for a 5-year-old a lot easier than a 1-year-old.
Yeah. You know what she can do that's so cute to me? She can sing multiple songs. She can't speak in full sentences, but she can sing the lyrics to multiple songs and act them out. Like she emotes.
I love that. That makes so much sense. Because they also say, apparently, when people have like brain damage, you're supposed to play music for them. And that helps them get their language back faster than talking to them does. So that makes sense that she can sing full sentences, but isn't quite monotoning full sentences.
So, that's all that's new in my life. I mean, chilling.
It's a lot new. You have a whole new person. Your household size increased pretty dramatically.
It really did. Do you want to try to give these people some advice before we say bye-bye?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if she's asking for advice. She's just like,
we're going to give it.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, I could literally write a book about my teaching experience and why I quit. I know y'all love long submissions, and I'm also at work at my new job as a front office assistant and probably needs to keep things briefish. I went to college with the aim of teaching middle school math or science with a preference for science. My first job offer ended up being for a 5th grade self-contained classroom. No big deal until I immediately realized how crazy it is to be in charge of multiple subjects and be with the same kids all day. Redacted would get it. That is my nightmare. I cannot imagine being with the child for a full day. I love being able to say goodbye after an hour and a half. Anyway, my fresh out of college 22-year-old self was not emotionally secure enough to be the authority figure of the room. Additionally, I was in a high-achieving school in my district with a team of 7 people where 3 of the 7 had been teaching 5th grade for ages and 2 of the 7 had additional teaching experience. The other first-year teacher on our team was 25 and worked full-time in college. So I was a baby, and more experienced team members just didn't get my perfection paralysis and people-pleasing didn't really work with managing kiddos. That is quite the battle to be fighting your first year. Been there. And I was out in a portable away from my mentor, and this was the 2019-2020 school year. Trigger warning, suicidal ideation. This is why I love this podcast. We have everything. We have postpartum anxiety. We have internet bullying. We have suicidal ideation.
Everything.
Lack of funding. Trigger warning here. I definitely had some spicy thoughts on my drive to work and thought about just swerving that steering wheel, you know? I'll be honest, fam. I was grateful our year got cut short from COVID and we had a long spring break and a virtual rest of the year. My next year, 2020 to 21, I was on the same campus in the same portable, but teaching fully virtual kids. Different set of challenges, but at least the expectations were lower and I moderately knew what I was doing, so we survived. I was also more technologically adept team member, so that boosted my confidence a bit. Even so, I was grateful that I was surplus to a new campus for the next school year, 21 to 22, which was their third year teaching. Surplusing in my district was to say that you had a contract, but there wasn't room at your original campus, so they'd move you to a different school close by. Then I could start fresh with coworkers who hadn't seen me cry during staff meetings because I felt like each PD was just an example of what I wasn't doing for my students. Did I mention that I got on Lexapro and started seeing a therapist after the first year? So I'm at a new campus for my third year of teaching. This campus had a brand new admin team, new principal in her first year, new assistant principals, all new to each other. A new campus opened nearby and took the school's original admin. Who thought of that? This is a terrible plan. Why would you put a whole new team at both schools? You should have taken two experienced administrators and put them at the new one.
Yeah.
And then split the newbies. So half of them, like, either way, you're with an experienced administrator. This is terrible.
Literally.
God.
Why doesn't anybody call us?
At the end of the first week of back-to-school teacher PDs, we had a happy hour where our principal got a call from the district that they needed more virtual teachers. Because the district claimed they'd limit the amount of families that could sign up for virtual, but then they backed out. So since this new team hated virtual even more than my last, I volunteered. Fall semester, I was teaching virtual fourth grade with a team of teachers all over my district, and none of my students were zoned for my campus. Again, a mess of its own, but lower expectations, so ultimately it was fine. What was not fine was finally getting back in person. Remember, I barely had a year of experience with classroom management from my first year teaching, and then 1.5 years where management was easy, mute all, closed chat. My home group of students were students that had been virtual for the last year and a half, and some students pulled from other homerooms to fill my roster and reduce some problems in other classrooms. There was plenty of mess here. Some of the students were reserved when coming back, but it quickly became clear that these kids were virtual because they just don't like people. Constant bickering and many cases of, I can dish it out, but I can't take it. Trigger warning, threat of school violence against a teacher. There was a 3-day period where our behavior specialist was out. I had several students on behavior plans. One especially did not do well with the study hall-esque period we had in the morning where intervention groups were pulled. He couldn't handle the lack of structure. I see this a lot and it drives me crazy. This empathetic understanding of why he acted out in a very inappropriate way was handled so poorly. Sparing all the details, he wasn't doing what he needed to do, so I was updating his behavior folder. Paraphrasing, but he said if he saw poor notes, then he'd come to the school and pew-pew me. So basically, the kid saw her documenting his behavior and said, cut that shit out. I was in shock, shut down my emotions, and wrote the quote in the behavior folder before going to the phone to call the office. I think sometimes I should have just hit the emergency wall button instead. The whole time he was sitting in his chair loudly describing how he wanted to hurt me, including stabbing me with the sharpened pencils. In the spring semester, we actually lost one of our APs mentioned earlier, and we had someone transfer from a neighboring district. Our principal was out that day, so admin number 2 came to the classroom to respond. She took the student down to the office and asked me and students who heard him to write witness statements. She also asked me if I felt threatened. See, again, as I'm empathetic enough to understand that he was bored and acting out, and I was in shock and my emotions shut down, so I said no. I then had the witness statements written and gathered, but wasn't able to leave my room to deliver them to the office until 1 p.m. when the incident happened at 10 a.m. When there's an incident, time is money. That's the crazy thing about public education, is how important the time of filing things is. Not until after the referral was filed and sent to this kid's dad did I realize something was wrong. Dad disputed the referral, saying it wasn't accurate and was much worse than what he was told. Sometime during the day, admin number 2 overheard my whispered hallway conference with my team and thought that the incident was the student threatened to shoot me with a gun, where they said shoot me with pew pew, loaded with sharpened pencils. Admin 2 shared this version of events to dad, the principal, and the area superintendent. So I guess the student said, I'm going to shoot her. And then they said the pencils thing. But when she was telling her coworker, she kind of combined them. And that abridged version is what got repeated out. I hate working for the government sometimes. The student only had one day of out-of-school suspension and then one day of in-school suspension and then a change of homeroom teacher. But because we were departmentalized, I still had to see him. Overall, it was an icky situation and grossly mishandled. Admin 2 had my statement and the statements of 5 other students who overheard this boy threaten many things, and she went by what she heard when discussing what to do. Additionally, when Dad disputed the referral, she wanted me to change what I wrote. I don't think I did, and I'm so icked out by the request. I also had written witness statements on all my phones since I took pictures. Despite all of this, I still did not quit after this semester. Anyway, all of that happened in spring of 2022. Fall of 2022, I was still at that school with the team for the fifth grade departmentalized subjects, and I was ready for another fresh start, beginning of the year, etc., etc. The fourth grade team had spent time in the spring creating recommended class rosters for students moving to fifth grade. There were many students who had IEPs, behavior plans, or straight up just didn't work well together. Our principal, in her 1 year of experience, overwrote all of their plans and put 9 special ed students in her in one homeroom, as well as several 504 students and 2 students who had known and documented issues with each other in the same room. All those kids in the exact same room. And they had a brand new special ed coordinator because 25 teachers quit after that principal's first year. There were several students in the homeroom with very high needs that I, the teacher submitting, and the special ed coordinator could not address. One student with autism had extreme sensory sensitivities. Even the hum of electricity could be too loud, struggled with social settings, etc., etc. They had several violent outbursts during the semester, violence towards themselves and to objects, throwing desks, tearing paper, hitting themselves, screaming, etc. They would often take the special ed coordinator's time, so minutes would not be met for the other special ed groups. This is the big beef I have with a lot of behavior plans, is that when you're looking at one kid's plan, it seems implementable, but when you add up everyone's plan, like at my school, we had a situation, hopefully everyone's okay with me sharing this because now they hired an additional person to handle it. One teacher had like 5 different kids who were supposed to be receiving one-on-one instruction at least 3 times a week. One person cannot do that.
It's so frustrating when you see kids that are put in an environment where they stack all these IEPs on one teacher and then they're not getting met. I don't know these kids, like I don't know their plans, but like at that point, are you really able to serve them correctly? And like, that's not fair. It's also kind of illegal.
It's softly illegal. Here, let me finish. She has a little bit left here. There were students with known issues with each other. One was a chronic liar, so it would be impossible to get them to take accountability. The other was a could dish it out but couldn't take it. Another had high levels of demand avoidance, yet another student was so high needs they'd fall on the floor or cry in my arms if something didn't go in a way that entertained them. I love that you said go in a way that entertained them because that's so specific and I know exactly what you mean. And again, the meltdown student would take a lot of the special ed coordinator's time, so sometimes these other 4 students didn't get what they need. This combination of 5 extremely high need students, other kids in the class aside, and the sheer inability of the admin district and campus to address those needs had me stressed as heck. I had 2 to 3 especially bad days during fall 2022 semester where I was ready to quit on the spot and work at Starbucks. I just decided enough was enough and handed in my resignation before Thanksgiving break and had my last day before winter break. The system is so broken. I've listened to your podcast for over a year and followed y'all on TikTok for 2 years and just realized how I was too burnt out to help myself, much less advocate for what my students need. I did my best, and we know there's worse out there, but my new job is so much better for my mental health, it's insane. I still get teaching nightmares sometimes of a coworker having to come into my classroom because I couldn't handle what was going on.
I'm so glad that you got out, though. Like, recognizing that is really, really hard. Like, when you're in it, you just feel like such a failure.
Yeah.
That, like, to actually step away and be like...
It's like you're drowning.
It is like you're drowning. And then it's so hard to, like, leave because you're like, no, no, if I just do it this way or if I just get this class or I just get this support, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. But, like, you don't have to. Good on you for, like, getting a new job. You shouldn't be thinking about swerving your car off the road on the way to work. Oh, yeah, I know.
We hope you all enjoyed Teacher Quit Talk. Fraz has a potato and a frog, so she's busy right now.
Thank you for listening. I mean, this was really just, we just really shot the shit for an hour, but hope you liked it.
I think it was needed. This is like the day where your teacher like got in a fight with her husband in the morning. So she was like, we're not doing stuff today.
Yeah. We're just going to sit around and talk. So I got to go feed this child. I love you guys so much.
Enjoy that. Love you guys so much. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.